Crying was getting on my last maternal instinct nerve. I finally found the right door and stepped inside. He'd taken serious precautions. I was in a funhouse room of mirrors. I could see stairs in a dozen different places, but I had no way of distinguishing between reflection and reality. And knowing Barons as well as I did, if I went for the reflection, something very nasty would happen to me. He obviously cared a great deal about the protection of the child. My dark lake offered, but I didn't need it. "Show me what is true," I murmured, and the mirrors fell dark, one after the next, until a chrome staircase gleamed in the low light. I moved silently down it, drawn by the siren lure of the child's sobs. Once again, my expectations were shot. The crying was coming from behind tall doors that were chained, padlocked, and engraved with runes. I shouldn't have been able to hear it at all. I was astonished I'd ever been able to hear Barons roaring this far underground. It took me 20 minutes to break the chains, wards, and runes. He obviously wanted this child protected to the hilt. Why? What was so important? What was going on? When I pushed open the doors, the crying stopped abruptly. I stepped into the room and looked around. Whatever I'd expected, it wasn't this. There was no opulence here, no treasure or collectibles. This was little better than Malucha's grotto beneath the Burren. The room was hewn from stone, a cave cleared out in the bedrock of the earth. A small stream ran through, appearing in the east wall, disappearing beyond the west. There were cameras mounted everywhere. He would know I'd been here, even if I walked back out right now. In the center of the room was a cage that was 20 by 20, made of massive iron bars, closely spaced. Like the doors, it was heavily runed. It was also empty. I moved toward it and stopped, stunned. It wasn't empty as I'd thought. A child lay in the cage, curled on its side, naked. He looked about 10 or 11. I hurried to him. "Honey, are you all right? What's wrong? Why are you in there?" The child looked up. I staggered and went to my knees on the stone floor, stupefied. I was looking at the child from the vision I'd shared with Barons. Every detail of it was crystal clear in my head, as if I'd lived it yesterday, a rare glimpse into Barons' heart. I could close my eyes and be back there again with him that easily. We were in a desert. It's dusk. We hold a child in our arms. I stare into the night. I won't look down. Can't face what's in his eyes. Can't not look. My gaze goes unwillingly, hungrily down. The child stares up at me with utter trust. "But you died," I protested, staring at him. The boy moved toward me, came to stand at the edge of the cage and wrapped his small hands around the bars. Beautiful boy. Dark hair, gold skin, dark eyes. His father's son. His eyes are soft, warm. And I'm Barons, staring down at him. His eyes say, "I know you won't let me die." His eyes say, "I know you will make the pain stop." His eyes said, "Trust. Love, adore. You are perfect. You will always keep me safe. You are my world." But I didn't keep him safe, and I can't make his pain stop. We'd been in the desert holding this child, this very boy in our arms, losing him, loving him, grieving him, feeling his life slip away. I see him there, his yesterdays, his today, the tomorrows that will never be. I see his pain and it shreds me. I see his absolute love and it shames me. He smiles at me. He gives me all his love in his eyes. It begins to fade. "No," I roar, "you will not die. You will not leave me." I stare into his eyes for what seems 1,000 days. I see him. I hold him. He is there. He is gone. But he's not gone. He's right here with me. The boy presses his face to the bars. He smiles at me. He gives me all his love in his eyes. I melt. If I could be someone's mother, I would take this child and keep him safe forever. I push to my feet, moving as if I'm in a trance. I've held this child inside Baron's head. As Baron's, I loved him, and I lost him. In sharing that vision, it became my wound, too. I don't understand. How are you alive? Why are you here? Why had Baron's experienced his death? There was no question that he had. I'd been there. I'd tasted it, too. It was reminiscent of the regrets I'd felt about Elena. Come back. Come back, you want to scream. Just one more minute. Just one more smile. One more chance to do things right. But he's gone. He's gone. Where did he go? What happens to life when it leaves? Does it go somewhere, or is it just fucking gone? How are you here? I say wonderingly. He speaks to me, and I don't understand a word of it. It's a language dead and forgotten. But I hear the plaintive tones. I hear a word that sounds like, Mama. Choking back a sob, I reach for him. As I slip my arms through the bars and gather his small, naked body into my arms, as his dark head floats into the hollow where my shoulder meets my neck, fangs puncture my skin, and the beautiful little boy rips out my throat. 42. I die for a long time, much longer than I think it should take. Figures I'd die slow and in pain. I pass out several times and am surprised that I regain consciousness. I feel fevered. The skin of my neck is numb, but the wound burns like I've been injected with venom. I think I left half of my neck in the child's impossibly expandable jaws. He began to change the moment I took him in my arms. I managed to tear myself from his preternaturally strong grasp and stumble from the cage before he completed the transformation. But it was too late. I'd been a fool. My heart had wed Baron's to a sobbing child and embraced sentimentality. I'd seen the chains, padlocks, and wards as Baron's way of keeping a child safe. What they'd really been was his way of keeping the world safe from the child. I lie on the floor of the stone chamber, dying. I lose awareness again for a time, then am back. I watch the child become the night version of Baron's beast. Black skin, black horns and fangs, red eyes. Talk about homicidally insane. He makes the beast Baron's was in the silver seem downright genial and calm. He bays continuously while he changes, head whipping from side to side, spraying me with his spittle and my blood, staring at me with feral crimson eyes. He wants to sink his teeth into me, shake me, and crush every last drop of blood from my body. The mark Baron's placed on my skull doesn't do a thing to diffuse his bloodlust. I am food, and he can't reach me. He rattles the bars of the cage, and he howls. He morphs from 4 to 10 feet tall. This is what I heard beneath the garage. This is what I listened to while looking at Baron's across the roof of a car. This child, caged down here, forever imprisoned. And I understand as my lifeblood seeps out that this is why he was bringing the dead woman out of the silver. The child had to be fed. He held this child, watched him die. I try to think about it, wrap my brain around it. The child has to be his son. If Baron's didn't feed him, the child suffered. If he did feed him, he had to look at this monster. How long? How long had he been caretaker for this child? 1,000 years? 10? More? I try to touch my neck, feel the extent of my wounds, but I can't raise my arms. I'm weak, dreamy, and I don't really care. I just want to close my eyes and sleep for a few minutes. Just a short nap. Then I'll wake up and get busy finding something in my lake to help me survive this. I wonder if there are runes that can heal torn-out throats. Maybe there's some unseelie in here somewhere. I wonder if that's my jugular gushing. If so, it's too late. Way too late for me now. I can't believe I'm going to die like this. Barons will come in and find me here, bled out on the floor of his bat cave. I try to summon the will to search my lake, but I think I lost too much blood too fast. I can't care, no matter how I try. The lake is curiously silent, like it's watching, waiting to see what happens next. The roaring in the cage is so loud, I don't hear Baron's roaring, too, until he's scooping me up into his arms and carrying me from the room, slamming doors behind him.
What the fuck, Mac? What the fuck?
He keeps saying over and over. His eyes are wild, his face white, his lips thin.
What were you thinking coming down here without me? I'd have brought you if I thought you'd be so stupid. Don't do this to me. You can't fucking do this to me.
I look up at him. Shades of Bluebeard, I muse dreamily. I open the door on his slaughtered wives. My mouth won't shape words. I want to know how the child is still alive. I feel numb. He's your son, isn't he? He doesn't answer me. He stares at me as if memorizing my face. I see something move deep in his eyes. I should have made love to this man. I was always afraid to be tender. I'm bemused by my own idiocy. He flinches.
Don't you think for a fucking minute you can put all that in your eyes, then die. That's bullshit. I'm not doing this again.
Got any unsealing? I half expect him to race above ground to hunt one and bring it back. But I don't have that much time, and I know it.
I'm not good, Mac. Never have been.
What? True confession time? My eyes tease. Don't need it.
I want what I want, and I take it.
Is he warning me? What could he possibly threaten me with now?
There's nothing I can't live with. Only things I won't live without.
He stares at my neck, and I know it's a mess from the look in his eyes. Savaged and shredded. I don't know how I'm still breathing, why I'm not dead. I think I can't talk because I no longer have intact vocal cords. He touches my neck. Well, at least I think he does. I see his hand beneath my chin. I can't feel anything. Is he trying to rearrange my internal parts like I once did to his, in the early morning sun on the edge of a cliff, as if I could put him back together by sheer force of will? His eyes narrow, and his brows draw together. He closes his eyes, opens them again, and frowns. He shifts me in his arms and studies me from a different angle, glancing between my face and neck. Comprehension smooths his brow, and his lips twist in the ghastly smile people give you right before they tell you they have good news and bad news. And the bad news is really bad.
When you were in Faerie, did you ever eat or drink anything, Mac?
Valain, I say silently. Drinks on beach.
Did they make you sick?
No.
Did you drink anything at any time that made you feel like your guts were being ripped out? You'd want to die. From what I hear, it would have lasted about a day.
I think a moment. The rape, I finally say. He gave me something. The one I couldn't see. I felt pain for a long time. Thought it was from the princess being inside me. His nostrils flare, and when he tries to speak, only a deep rattle comes out. He tries twice more before he gets it right.
They would have left you like that forever. I'm going to slice them into tiny pieces and feed them to one another, slowly, over centuries.
His voice is as calm as a sociopath's. What are you saying?
I wondered. You smelled different afterward. I knew they'd done something, but you didn't smell like the Rhymer. You were like him, but different. I had to wait and see.
Staring up at him, I take a fresh mental assessment of myself. I am beginning to feel my neck again. It burns like hell, but I can swallow. Not dying?
They must have been afraid they'd kill you with their...
He looks away, muscles working in his jaw.
An eternity of hell. You would have been Priya forever.
His face is tight with fury.
What did they do to me?
I demand. He resumes walking, carries me through room after room, finally stopping in a chamber nearly identical to the rear seating cozy in BB&B. Rugs, lamps, Chesterfield, fluffy throws. Only the fireplace is different. Enormous, with a stone hearth a man can stand in. Gas logs, no wood smoke seeping out somewhere to give him away. He props pillows against the arm and places me gently on the sofa. He moves to the fireplace and turns it on.
The Fae have an elixir that prolongs life.
They gave it to me.
He nods.
Is that what happened to you?
I said prolongs, not turns you into a 9-foot-tall horned insane monster.
He watches my neck.
You're healing. Your wounds are closing. I know a man that was given this elixir 4,000 years ago. He smells different, too. As long as the Rhymer is never stabbed by the spear or sword, he lives, unaging. He can only be killed in the ways a Fae can be killed.
I stare up at him.
I'm immortal?
I can move my arms again. I touch my neck. I feel thick ridges as the skin fuses back together. It's like when I ate on Sealy. I'm healing beneath my hands. I feel things crunching, moving in my neck, growing new and strong.
Think of it as long-lived and hard to kill.
4,000 years long-lived? I stare at him blankly. I don't want to live 4,000 years. I think about that unseelie, badly mutilated, left in my back alley. Immortality is terrifying. I just want my small lifetime. I can't even conceive of 4,000 years. I don't want to live forever. Life is hard. 80 or 100 years would be just perfect. That's all I ever wanted.
You might want to seriously reconsider carrying that spear. In fact, I may decide to destroy it. And the sword.
He unbuckles the holster from my shoulder and throws it to the floor near the fireplace. I watch it clatter to a stop against the facade of the hearth, relieved. I can die. Not that I want to right now. I just like options. As long as I have the spear, I have options. I'm never getting rid of that thing. It's my date with a gravestone, and I'm human. I want to die one day. But he can't. It's the first complete sentence I speak since I was attacked. Your son can't die, can he? No matter what. Ever. 43. If I'd never eaten Unseelie, healing miraculously would have messed with my head. As it was, I pretended I had eaten Unseelie. I couldn't deal with the whole elixir that prolongs life scenario. It made me want to kill Derek all over again. Violently. Sadistically. With lots of torture. He'd not only turned me Priya, he'd planned for me to live that way eternally. I'd softened when I saw those pictures of him with Alina, imagining a different outcome for them. But now all softness vanished. If Barons hadn't saved me, I couldn't even begin to imagine the horrors. I didn't want to. I would have been pathologically insane in a very short time. What if he'd locked me away, refused to give me what I needed, kept me somewhere small and dark and... I shuddered.
Stop thinking about it,
Baron said. I shivered. I couldn't help it. There really were worse things than dying.
It didn't happen. I got you out and brought you back. It all worked out in the end. You're tough to kill. I'm glad.
I'd bled out, according to Barron's, several times. Too much of my throat had been torn away from my body to repair me quickly enough. While I'd been dead, or at least no longer breathing, my body had continued repairing itself. I'd regained consciousness only to bleed out again. Eventually, enough of me had been restored that I'd remained conscious for the rest of the process. I was covered with blood, crusted with it. Barron's picks me up and is carrying me again. We pass through luxurious rooms, downstairs and more stairs, and I realize there are more than 3 levels beneath his garage. He has a whole world down here. I usually hate being underground, but this is different. There's a sensation of expansiveness, of space not being quite what it seems. I suspect he has more silvers in here, many ways in and out. It's the ultimate survivalist fantasy. The world could be nuked and life would go on down here, or we could pass through to some other world. With Barron's, I suspect no catastrophe is ever final. He always goes on. Now so will I. I don't like that. I've been reprogrammed, changed in so many ways. This one is going to be the hardest to deal with. It makes me feel less human, and I was already feeling detached. Am I part of the Unseelie King, now nearly immortal? I wonder if this is a loop. Are we reborn over and over again to repeat the same cycles?
Would it be so bad?
Are you reading my mind?
You're thinking with your eyes.
He smiles. I touch his face, and the smile vanishes. Do it again.
Don't be a jackass.
I laugh. But there's no amusement left in his face. It was swiftly erased. He looks at me with cold, hard eyes. I see what's in them now. To the rest of the world, they might seem empty. I remember thinking a few times myself that they were void of all humanity, but that's simply not true. He feels rage, pain, lust, so much emotion, electric beneath his skin, so much volatility. Man and beast always at war. I know now it's never easy for him. The battle he fights is non-stop. How does this man go on every day? He stops and lowers me to my feet. He moves through the shadows, turns on a gas fire, and begins to light candles. We are in his bedroom. It's like the Unseelie King's lair, opulent, luxurious, with an enormous bed draped in black silk, black furs. I can't see past it. All I can see is myself there, naked with him. I'm trembling. I'm awed that I'm here, that he wants me. He lights more candles near the bed. He picks up pillows and pushes them into a pile I remember from being Priya. In that long-ago basement, he mounded them beneath my hips. I sprawled over them with my head on the bed and my ass in the air. He would rub himself back and forth between my legs until I was begging, then push slowly into me from behind. He places the last pillow on the pile and looks at me. He jerks his head toward the pile of pillows.
I watched you die. I need to fuck you, Mac.
The words slam into me like bullets, taking my knees out. I lean back against a piece of furniture. An armoire, I think. I really don't care. It holds me up. It wasn't a request. It was acknowledgement of a requirement to make it from this moment to the next. Like, I need a transfusion. My blood has been poisoned.
Do you want me to?
There is no purr or coyness or seduction in his voice. There is a question that needs an answer. Bare bones. That's what he's after. That's what he offers. Yes. He strips his shirt over his head and I catch my breath, watching those long, hard muscles ripple. I know how his shoulders look, bunched when he's on top of me, how his face gets tight with lust as he eases inside me.
Who am I?
Jericho.
Who are you?
He kicks off his boots, steps out of his pants. He's commando tonight. My breath whooshes out of me in a run-on word. Who gives a fuck?
Finally.
The word is soft. The man is not. I need a shower. His eyes glitter. His teeth flash in the darkness.
A little blood never bothers me.
He glides toward me in that way that barely displaces air. A velvet shadow in the darkness. He is the night. He always has been. I used to be a sunshine girl. He circles me, looking me up and down. I watch him, holding my breath. Jericho Barons is walking naked circles around me, looking at me like he's going to eat me alive. In a good way, not like his son. As I watch him, emotion staggers me, and I realize that I never completely thawed from what I'd done to myself back there on the cliff, when I'd believed he was dead. I'd stripped away so much of me in order to survive. When I'd realized he was alive, there were so many other things going on, and I was angry because he hadn't told me, and I'd shoved the messy tangle away, refused to look at it. I'd walked through the past few months refusing to let any of what was happening really touch me, refusing to accept the woman I'd become, denying that I'd even become it. Now I thaw. Now I stand and look at him and realize why I never turned it all back on. I would have destroyed the world for him. And I couldn't face that, couldn't stand what it said about me. I want to slow this moment down. Once before, I ended up in bed with him inside me, but I was Priya. It happened so quickly and without conscious choice that it was over before it began. I want this to happen in slow motion. I want to live every second like it's my last. I've chosen this. It feels incredible. Wait. His demeanor changes instantly. His eyes haze with crimson.
I haven't waited long enough.
His chest rattles. His hands are at his sides, curling, flexing. He breathes hard and fast. In the flickering light, his skin begins to darken. I stare at him. Just like that, lust to fury. I think he might launch himself on me, take me down, shredding my clothes as we go, and shove inside me before we even hit the floor.
I'd never take it.
His eyes narrow. Crimson stains the white, bleeds into them with tiny rivers. Suddenly his eyes are black on red, no whites at all.
But I won't tell you. I haven't thought about it.
I inhale deeply.
You're here, in my bedroom. You have no fucking idea what that does to me. If a woman comes to this place, she dies. If I don't kill her, my men do.
Has a woman ever come to this place?
Once.
Did she find her own way in, or did you bring her?
I brought her.
And?
I made love to her.
I jerk, turning with him, staring into his eyes. That he says those words about another woman makes me feel like launching myself at him, tearing off my clothes and slamming him home inside me before we reach the floor, erasing her. He wants to fuck me. He made love to her. He's watching me closely and seems to like what he sees. And?
When I was done, I killed her.
He says it without emotion, but I see more in his eyes. He hated himself for killing her. He believed he had no choice. He succumbed to a moment of wanting someone in his bed, in his home, in his world. He wanted to feel normal for a night. And she paid for it with her life.
I'm not the hero, Mac. Never have been, never will be. Let us be perfectly clear. I'm not the anti-hero either. So quit waiting to discover my hidden potential. There's nothing to redeem me.
I want him anyway. It's what he wanted to know. I exhale impatiently and shove hair from my face. Are you going to talk me to death or fuck me, Jericho Barons?
Say it again. The last part.
I do.
They'll try to kill you.
Good thing I'm hard to kill. Only one thing concerned me. Will you?
Never. I'm the one who will always watch over you. Always be there to fuck you back to your senses when you need it. The one who will never let you die.
I pull my shirt over my head and kick off my shoes. What more could a woman ask? I skinny out of my jeans, but get a foot tangled up trying to get out of my underwear. I stumble. He's on me before I hit the floor. Since the moment I laid eyes on Jericho Barons, I wanted him. I wanted him to do things to me that pink and clueless Michaela Lane was shocked and appalled and, okay, yeah, well, utterly fascinated to find herself thinking about. I admitted none of it to myself. How could a peacock lust for a lion? I'd been as fancy as one of the proud males in my useless plumage. I'd strutted around, stealing glances at the king of the jungle, denying what I felt. I'd assessed my tail and his killing claws and understood that if the lion were ever to lay down with the peacock, it would only be on a nest of bloody feathers. It hadn't stopped me from wanting him. It made me grow claws. As I fall to the floor beneath him, I think, here I am now, a featherless peacock with claws. My lovely tail lost in one ordeal or the other. I look in the mirror and have no idea what I am. Don't care. Perhaps I'll grow a mane. Relief floods me when his body slams into mine. Barron's moves like a sudden dark wind. He's not only on me, but pushing in me before we hit the floor. Oh, God. Yes. Finally. My head slams back into wood, but I barely feel it. My neck and back arch, my legs spread. My ankles are on his shoulders, and I suffer no conflicts. There is only need, and the answer to it all shoving inside me. Sleek, hard, animal dressed up in the skin of a man. I look up at him, and he's part beast. His face is mahogany. His fangs are out. His eyes are Barron's. The look in them isn't. It makes me wild. I can be whatever I want to be with him. No inhibitions. I feel him growing harder, longer inside me. Oh, you can do that? I gasp. The beast was bigger than the man. He laughs, and it is definitely not a human sound. I moan, I whimper, I writhe. It's incredible. He's filling me up, gliding deep and deliciously inside me where I've never felt a man before. Oh, God, I come, I explode. I hear someone roaring. It's me. I laugh and keep coming. I think I scream. I use my claws and he bucks in me, sudden and rapid. He makes that sound in the back of his throat I'm so crazy about. I love that sound. I'd walk through hell and back, smiling as long as he was beside me. As long as I could glance over at him and our eyes would meet, and we'd share one of those wordless looks.
You haven't lost your feathers.
His words are strange, guttural, forced out around fangs. I'd snort, but then his tongue is in my mouth. My jaws are wide and I can't breathe. And he's right. One day you do meet a man who kisses you and you can't breathe around it. And you realize you don't need air. Oxygen is trivial. Desire makes life happen. Makes it matter, makes everything worth it. Desire is life. Hunger to see the next sunrise or sunset. To touch the one you love. To try again.
Hell would be waking up and wanting nothing.
He agrees. He knows what I'm thinking. Always. We're connected. The atoms between us ferry messages back and forth. Harder. Deeper. Come on, Barron's. More. I feel violent. I am unbreakable. I am elastic around him, insatiable. His hand is on the side of my neck, around my throat, half cupping my face. His eyes bore into mine. He watches every nuance, every detail of every expression, as if his existence depends on it. He fucks with the single-minded devotion of a dying man hunting God. As he fills me, I wonder if in the same way that sex makes its own unique perfume, we don't really make love. As in create, manufacture, evoke an independent element in the air around us. And if enough of us did it really well, for real, not just for the hell of it, we could change the world. Because when he's in me, I feel the space around us changing, charging, and it seems to set off some kind of feedback loop, where the more he touches me, the more I need him to. Having sex with Barron sates my need. then feeds it, sates, then feeds. It's a never-ending cycle. I get out of bed with him, frantic to be back in it again, and I...
Hated you for it,
he says gently. That was my line.
I never get enough, Mac. Drives me bug-fuck. I should kill you for what you make me feel.
I understand perfectly. He is my vulnerability. I would become Shiva, the world-eater, for him. He withdraws, and I nearly scream from the emptiness. Then he's lifting me into his arms, and I'm on the bed, and he's spreading me over the mound of pillows, nudging my legs wide. And when he pushes into me from behind, I sob with relief. I'm whole. I'm alive. I close my eyes and ride the mindless bliss. It's all I can do. Be. Feel. Live. I'm Priya again. I always will be with this man. Much later, I look up at him. He's on top of me, barely inside me. I'm swollen, hot, and fiercely alive. My hands are over my head. He likes to tease an inch, maybe two, until I'm crazy with need, then drive it home hard. It undoes me every time. I know part of what turns me on so hard, makes me so violent with lust, is that he's dangerous. I fell for the bad guy. I'm crazed about the one who's trouble, the alpha that doesn't play well with others and doesn't take orders from anyone. What else would I expect? It's possible I'm part of the ancient creator of the Unseelie race. He's kissing me. Valaine's name is long gone from my tongue. There's only him, and he's right. No other man would fit.
Maybe there's nothing wrong with you at all, Mac,
he says.
Maybe you're exactly what you're supposed to be, and the only reason you feel so conflicted about it is that you keep trying to bat for the wrong team.
He thrusts deep, rocks his hips forward with a muscle I'd be willing to bet no human man had. I arch my back. Are you saying you think I'm evil?
Evil isn't a state of being, it's a choice.
I don't think... My mouth is suddenly busy. By the time I get around to finishing my sentence, I have no idea what I was going to say. We end up in the shower, an enormous affair of Italian marble and shower heads on all walls. A dozen feet long, 6 feet wide, it has a bench that's just the right height. I think we stay in there for days. He brings in food, and I eat in the shower. I wash him, slide my hands over his beautiful body. When you die, do your tattoos disappear? Wet, his hair is darker, glossy, his skin a deep bronze. Water runs over muscle, sprays off his erection. He's always hard.
Yes.
That's why they were different. I frown. Do you come back exactly how you were when you died the first time?
Were you Priya the entire time?
I gasp and try to duck my head so he can't see my eyes. My eyes betray me sometimes, no matter how hard I try, especially when my feelings are intense. He grabs my head and holds it with two fistfuls of my hair, forcing me to look at him.
I knew it. You weren't.
His mouth is on mine. He has me against the wall. I can't breathe, and I don't care. He is exultant.
How long?
He demands. What happens when you die? I counter.
I come back.
Duh, obviously. How? Where? Do you eventually just stand up from your ashes again or something? I hear a rattle, and suddenly he's on the floor, head back, muscles rippling, fighting to remain a man. He's losing the battle. He has talons. Black fangs slide from his mouth, gouging into his skin. I can tell he doesn't want to turn, but something I asked him has made him frenzied. I can't stand watching him struggle. I wonder if anyone has ever tried to help Barons. I answer, talk to him to keep him grounded in the here and now. I knew what was happening from the moment you asked me what I wore to the prom. I drop to my knees beside him, take his head in my arms and cradle him at my breast. His face is half beast, half man. I began to surface. It was like I was there, but trying not to be there. I'm here, Jericho. Stay with me. Later we sleep. Or I do. I don't know what he does. I'm exhausted and warm and feel safe for the first time in a long time, drifting off in Baron's underground world next to the King of Beasts. I wake to him pushing into me from behind. We've had sex so many times, so many ways I can barely move. I've come so many times I think it's impossible for me to even want to come again. Oh, but then he's inside me, and my body tells a different story. I need so badly I ache. I slip my hand down, and as soon as I touch myself, I come. He shoves into me deep, rocking into my climax. I'm on my side. He's tucked me into his body, spooned close. His arms are around me, his lips on my neck. Teeth graze my skin. When I stop shuddering, he pulls out, and immediately I want him again. I push back with my rump, and he's back. He goes slow, so slow, it's torture. He thrusts. I clench. He withdraws. I lay tense, waiting. Neither of us says a word. I barely breathe. He stops and stays perfectly still for a while, but not to tease. He likes being hard inside me. Connected, we lie there in silence. I don't want the moment to end. But it does, and when we're separate, we don't speak for a long time. I watch the shadows flickering on a famous painting on the wall. He's not asleep. I can feel him back there, aware. Do you ever sleep?
No.
That must be hell. I love sleeping. Curling up, napping, dreaming. I need to dream.
I dream,
he says coolly. I didn't mean...
Never pity me, Miss Lane. I like what I am.
I roll over in his arms, touch his face. I let myself be tender, trace his features, slide my fingers into his hair. He seems both put off and entranced by the way I'm touching him. I rearrange my head to accommodate the advantages of never sleeping. There are a lot. How do you dream if you don't sleep?
I drift. Humans need to shut down to let go. Meditation accomplishes the same thing, lets the subconscious play. That's all you need.
What happened to your son?
Aren't you question girl?
He mocks. He's why you want the Shisadu. I feel the sudden violence in his body. It gusts like a sirocco, and just like that I'm inside his head and we're in a desert, and I wonder with a strange sense of duality in which I am him and I am me, why it always seems to come back to this place for him. Then, I'm Baron's, and I'm on my knees in the sand. The wind is kicking up, the storm comes. I was stupid, so stupid. Death for hire. I laughed. I drank. I fucked. Nothing mattered. I swaggered through life a god. Grown men screamed when they saw me coming. I was born today. I opened my eyes for the first time. It all looks so different now that it's too late. What a grand fucking joke on me. I should never have come here. This is one battle for hire I should never have taken. I hold my son and I weep. The sky opens, letting the storm free. Sand comes, so thick it turns day into night. One by one, my men fall around me. I curse the heavens as I die. They curse me back. There is black. Only black. I wait for the light. The old ones say there is light when you die. They say to run for it. If it goes away, you drift the earth forever. No light comes to me. I wait all night in the dark. I'm dead, yet I can feel the desert beneath my corpse. The abrasion of sand on my skin, up my nostrils. Scorpions sting my hands and my feet. Open, dead eyes, crusted with sand, watch the night sky as the stars pop and vanish one by one. The darkness is absolute. I wait and wonder. The light will come. I wait. I wait. The only light that comes for me is dawn. I stand up and my men stand up and we stare uneasily at one another. Then my son stands up. And I don't care. I spare no thought for the strange night that shouldn't have been. The universe is a mystery. The gods are fickle. I am, and he is, and that is enough. I toss him on my horse and leave my men behind.
My son was killed 2 days later.
I open my eyes, blinking. I can still taste sand, feel the grit in my eyes. Scorpions crawl at my feet.
It was an accident. His body disappeared before we could bury it.
I don't understand. Did you die in the desert or not? Did he?
We died. It was only later that I pieced it together. Things rarely make sense while they're unfolding. After my son died the second time, he died many more times. Simply trying to get back to me and come home. He was deep in the desert without conveyance or water.
I stare. What are you saying? That every time he died, he came back in the same place he died that first time with you?
At dawn, the next day.
Over and over. He would try to make it out. Die of heat stroke or something, then have to start all over again?
Far from home. We didn't know. None of us died for a long time. We knew we were different, but we didn't know about the dying. That came later.
I watch him and wait for him to speak again. This is the crux of Barons. I want to know. I won't push.
That wasn't the end of his hell. I had rivals who rode the desert, too. Death for hire. Many were the times we'd thinned each other's pack. One day they found him walking the sands. They played with him.
He looks away.
They tortured and killed him.
How do you know this?
Because when I finally put things together, I tortured and killed a few of them, and they talked while they died.
His lips smile. His eyes are cold, merciless.
They set up camp not too far from where he was reborn every dawn, and found him the next day. Once they realized what was happening, they believed he was demon spawn. They tortured and killed him over and over. The more he came back, the more determined they were to destroy him. I don't know how many times they killed him. Too many. They never let him live long enough to change. They didn't know what he was, nor did he. Just that he kept coming back. One day another band attacked, and they didn't have time to kill him. He was left alone, tied up in a tent for days. He got hungry enough that he turned. He never turned back. It was a year before we were hired to hunt the beast that was scouring the country, ripping out the throats and hearts of men.
I was horrified. They killed him every day for a year, and you were hired to kill him?
We knew it was one of us. We'd all changed. We knew what we'd become. It had to be him. I hoped.
His mouth twisted in a bitter smile.
I actually hoped it was my son.
There was naked hunger in his eyes.
How long was he a child tonight? How long did you see him before he attacked you?
A few minutes.
I haven't seen him like that in centuries.
I could see him remembering the last time.
They broke him. He can't control his change. I've seen him as my son only 5 times, as if for a few moments he knew peace.
You can't reach him? Teach him? Barons could teach anyone.
Part of his mind is gone. He was too young, too frightened. They destroyed him. A man might have withstood it. A child had no chance. I used to sit by his cage and talk to him. When technology afforded, I recorded every moment to catch a glimpse of him as my son. The cameras are off now. I couldn't watch the recordings looking for him. I have to keep him caged. If the world ever found him, they would kill him too. Over and over. He's feral. He kills. That's all he does.
You feed him.
He suffers if I don't. Fed. Sometimes he rests. I've killed him. I've tried drugs. I learned sorcery, druidry. I thought voice might make him sleep. Even die. It seemed to hypnotize him for a time. He's highly adaptable. The ultimate killing machine. I studied. I collected relics of power. I drove your spear through his heart 2,000 years ago when I first heard of it. I forced a fae princess to do her best. Nothing works. He's not in there. Or if he is somewhere, he is in constant, eternal agony. It never ends for him. His faith in me was misplaced. I can never...
Save him. He doesn't say. And I don't either, because if I'm not careful, I'm going to start crying. And I know it would only make things worse for him. He's thousands of years past tears. He just wants release. Wants to lay his son to rest. Tuck him in and say goodnight forever one last time. You want to unmake him?
Yes.
How long has this been going on? He says nothing. He will never tell me, and I realize a number doesn't really matter. The grief he felt in the desert has never abated. I understand now why they would kill me. It's not just his secret. It's theirs, too. All of you return to the place you first died every time you die. He is instantly violent. I understand. They kill to keep anyone from doing to them what was done to his son. It is their only vulnerability, wherever they come back at dawn the next day. An enemy could sit there waiting for them and kill them over and over again. I don't want to know where that is, ever. I assure him and mean it. Jericho will get the book. We'll find a spell of unmaking, I promise. We'll put your son to rest. I feel suddenly vicious. Who had done this to them? Why? I swear it. I vow. One way or another, we'll make it happen. He nods, folds his arms behind his head, stretches back on a pillow and closes his eyes. As the moments pass, I watch the tension leave his face. I know he's in that place where he meditates, where he controls things. What extraordinary discipline. How many thousands of years has he been taking care of his son, feeding him, trying to kill him and ease his agony, if only for a few moments? I'm back in the desert again. Not because he takes me there, but because I can't get the look on his son's face out of my head. His eyes say, I know you will make the pain stop. Barron's has never been able to. It never ended for either of them. The child whose death destroyed him has destroyed him every single day since, by living.
Dying,
Barron said,
is easy. The man who dies escapes, plain and simple.
I'm suddenly glad Alina is dead. If the light comes for anyone, it came for her. She rests somewhere. But not his son, and not this man. I press my cheek to his chest to listen to his heart beating. And for the first time since I met him, I realize it isn't. Have I never heard his blood rush before? His heart pound? How could I not have noticed? I look up at him to find him staring down his chest at me, an unfathomable expression in his eyes.
I haven't eaten lately.
And your heart stops beating?
It becomes painful. Eventually I would change.
What do you eat? I say carefully.
None of your fucking business,
he says gently. I nod. I can live with that. He moves differently down here. He doesn't try to conceal anything. Here he is himself and moves in that way that seems one with the universe, smooth as silk, flowing noiselessly from room to room. If I forget to pay attention to where he is, I misplace him. I discover he's leaning against a column, when I'd thought he was the column, arms folded, watching me. I explore his underground lair. I don't know how long he's lived, but it's clear he has always lived well. He was a mercenary once, in another time, another place, who knows how long ago. He liked fine things then, and his taste hasn't changed. I find his kitchen. It's a gourmet chef's dream. Stainless steel, top of the line, everything. Lots of marble and beautiful cabinets. Sub-zero fridge and freezer well stocked. Wine cellar to die for. As I devour a plate of bread and cheese, I imagine him here all those nights when I trudged up to my fourth or fifth floor bedroom and slept alone. Did he pace these floors, cook himself dinner or maybe eat it raw, practice dark arts, tattoo himself, go for a drive in one of his many cars? He was so close all that time. Down here, naked on silk sheets. It would have driven me crazy if I'd known then what I know now. He peels a mango while I wonder how he managed to get his hands on fruit in post-wall Dublin. It's so ripe it drips down his fingers, his arms. I lick the juice from his hands. I push him back and eat the pulp off his stomach, lower, then end up with my bare ass on the cool marble of the island and him inside me again, my legs locked around his hips. He stares down at me as if he's memorizing my face, watches me like he can't quite believe I'm here. I sit on the island while he makes me an omelet. I'm ravenous, body and soul, burning off more calories than I can eat. He cooks naked. I admire his back and shoulders, his legs. I found the second prophecy, I tell him. He laughs.
Why does it always take you so long to tell me the important things?
You should talk, I say dryly. He slides the plate in front of me and hands me a fork.
Eat.
When I finish, I say, you have the amulet, don't you? He catches his tongue in his teeth briefly and gives me a full-on smile. It says,
I'm the biggest, baddest fuck, and I have all the toys.
We go back to his bedroom, and I get the page from Mad Mori's notebook and the tarot card from my pocket. He looks at the card.
Where did you say you got this?
Chester's. The dreamy-eyed guy gave it to me.
Who?
The good-looking college-aged guy that bartends. His head moves funny, like a snake drawing back to strike.
How good-looking?
I look at him. His gaze is cool.
If you want that kind of life, get the fuck out of my house now,
his eyes say. Nothing like you, Barons. He relaxes.
So, who is he? Have I ever seen him?
I tell him when and where and describe him, and he looks puzzled.
I've never seen the kid. I saw an elderly man with a heavy Irish accent pouring drinks a few times when I came to get you, but no one like you're describing.
I shrug. Point is, it's too late for the first prophecy to work. I hand him the page. Darok was convinced he was the one who could use the amulet. But I read his translation, and it sounds like it could be you, or Dagus, or any number of men. Barons takes the parchment from me and scans it.
Why would he think it was him?
Because it says, he who is not what he was, and he used to be Fae. He turns it over, looks at Darok's translation, then flips back to Mad Mori's prophecy.
Darok didn't speak Old Irish when I trained him, and if he picked it up since then, he didn't learn it very well. His translation is wrong. It's a rare dialect, and gender neutral. It says, the one that is possessed or inhabited.
That's what the first prophecy said. He looks at me and raises a brow. It takes me a moment to interpret his expression. You think it's me? Somehow that doesn't surprise me. As if some part of me always knew it was going to come down to this in the end. Me against the Shisadu, winner take all. It smacks of fate. I hate fate. I don't believe in her. Unfortunately, I think the bitch believes in me. He moves to a vault behind the painting I'd been watching candlelight flicker over earlier and removes the amulet. It's dark in his hands. The moment he approaches me, it pulses faintly. I reach for it. It blazes when I touch it. It feels right in my hands. I've wanted it since the moment I first saw it.
You're the wild card, Mac. I've thought that since the beginning. This thing thinks you're epic. So do I.
Quite a compliment. I cup the amulet in my hands. I know this piece. I turn inward, hunting, searching. I've learned so much tonight about him, about myself. In this place, I feel fearless. Nothing can touch me. Nothing can do too much damage to me. I feel calmer than I've felt in a long time. If I can use this, I can find the spell to unmake his son. I can end their suffering. Show me what is true, I say, and shake off my blinders. I quit trying to force myself on the truth to reshape it, and I let the truth force itself on me. What have I been hiding from? What monsters have been stalking me, waiting patiently for me to look at them? I close my eyes and open my mind. Fragments of times forgotten flash past me so fast I see only blurs of color. I trust my heart to take me where I need to go and tell me when to stop. The images slow, become static, and I am in another place, another time. It's so real I can smell the scent of spiced roses nearby. I love the smell because it makes me think of her. I keep the roses everywhere. I look around. I am in a laboratory. Cruz is gone. I watched him leave. He loves me, but he loves himself more. I finished the fourth amulet without him. The first three were imperfect. This one does what I want it to do. Balances the scales between us. She will shine as brilliantly in the night sky as do I. Giants mate with giants or not at all. I will take it to my beloved myself. I cannot make her fey, but I will give her all our powers in other ways. Perhaps I am a fool to give her an amulet capable of weaving illusion that could seduce even me. But my faith in my love knows no bounds. My wings trail the floor as I turn. I am enormous. I am singular. I am eternal. I am the Unseelie King. 44. Dusk comes hard-edged and violet. Dancer'd like that thought. He's a poet, brilliant, cool with words. Wrote a piece the other day about murdering clocks, 'cause they feck us up, keep us stuck in the past and keep us from living the day. Used to have this thing in my past ride me all the feckin' time. But now she knows. And I say, fine, get the monkey off my back. I shift, restless, staring down at BB&B. There's a limo out front. Pulled up hours ago. Ain't moved since. Couldn't see who got out. Somebody changed the sign. I think it must have been Mac. And it cracks me up, but I don't laugh from the belly like I used to. Swallow it instead. Ain't like she ain't gonna try to kill me. And I ain't gonna die, so... There we are. Guess somebody's gonna bite it. Been watching the place off and on for days. Watching the watchers. Everybody's nervous, chewing each other's heads off. Book went nuts the other day. Turned some guy into a suicide bomb. Walked him right into Chester's. Lots of peeps died getting him out of there. Blown up when it blew. They're paranoid out at the Abbey. Think it's gonna be next. Ain't nobody can track the thing, 'cause Mac's gone missing. So's Baron's. Without him, we're stuck. Ain't nobody can sense the book till it's on top of us. Dancer thinks it'll make a nuke one day. End us all. He says we gotta put it down fast. I watch, knees up, arms around, perched on a water tower. Nobody looking this high. I've been shot out. Roe won't let me near none of the action. Cat and Joe keep me in the loop. They don't know I killed Alina. Mac don't know, 'cause I just found out, But there's a third prophecy. Something about mirror images and sons and daughters, and monsters within being monsters without. Jo wasn't done translating yet, but she was worried big time. Seems the longer the book's loose, the worse the odds get. I heard Ryo telling that white-haired dude with the freaky eyes that Mac's gotta die. But not before the book gets shut down. Pissed him off real bad that it came into his club and tried to blow it. You don't mess with Ryo. He's got dudes on top of the bookstore. They move funny. Joe's hanging on a roof a few buildings over with Cat and her trusty little group of she-sheep. Bah, I say under my breath. They're staring through binocs. Never look my way. Only see what they expect to see. What she tells them to see. Dickheads. Pull your heads out, I think. Smell the sheep shit. The things I know. The Scots are on top of a 5-story in the dark zone. They got binocs too. These eyeballs of mine don't need no help seeing. I'm supercharged, super wired, super D. All seeing, all hearing, all jamming all the time. I smell Verlaine. Spice on the wind. Dunno where he is. Somewhere near. 5 days Mac and Baron's been gone, since the night they tried to trap the book. Rose blaming it all on Mac. First, she was glad Mac was gone. Said we didn't need her, didn't want her. But she came to us